Tell you what, when I was preparing for this message tonight, I came across something that was, intriguing, I don't know, amazing. It was something that really kind of shocked me. It sent me back. I think as you follow along with me and get towards the conclusion, you'll see what I mean. I have a feeling that it may set you back as well. I uncovered something that, maybe something I'd always assumed but never really known for sure. Anyway, there. It's not good though. It's bad. It's something bad. So we'll see how we can apply this to our Christian lives. Is everyone familiar with the Ten Commandments? Probably. Or at least familiar that there are Ten Commandments. I think most people are. Well, God has given us His commandments. Since you're here tonight, I'm also assuming that you do the best you can to live by these commandments that God has given us. Well, that's good, but if you've paid attention to the world, society, the way people outside the church are living, it would appear that they're also living by a set of commandments that don't quite match up to the commandments that we've been given through the Lord. It's possible that some people within the church also are living by some of these commandments. They infiltrate quite well. One such commandment might be, thou shalt have no other gods before me in the church, but outside the church, all religions are the same. They lead to the ultimate good. They lead to the same place. Not the same thing at all, is it? It sounds good to those outside the church. I don't know if it gives them that cozy, warm feeling. It makes them feel better about themselves, but it's there, and they're using it, and I'm sure most of us here have heard that or something like that being said. I call that a societal faux pas. I don't know if I made societal tough or not, but by that I mean society. Okay, faux pas, that's French for false pas. And I think you'll see tonight, as you follow along with me, that someone has been setting out false paths when there's only one real road, a narrow road, that leads to heaven. So, let's start with this. Are Christians smart? Maybe, kind of, some of them. I like to think that Christians are some of the smartest people on earth. But, really, I would say that we're all human. As far as intelligence goes, we're probably on par with the rest of the population of the world. We do have one thing that kind of sets us apart, and that's that we trust and obey in the most intelligent. We get some pretty good information from him. But as far as intelligence is concerned, as a human basis, on par. Well, intelligence, Christian intelligence, I'm going to call that faux pas number one. Many in society believe that because Christians operate on faith, that they're not as intelligent as atheists. I know that because at one point I kind of led this atheistic lifestyle and thought I was smarter than Christians. And it was because Christians couldn't believe in the real science that was being taught because they had to fall back on faith. And they had to fall back on an idea of God. And if science didn't match up with their faith, well, science was wrong. As I understood it, science had been proven to be true. So they just weren't very smart. They were believing in something they thought to be true instead of the facts that science provided. That's the faux pas. As John showed us last week, when the early philosophers and scientists first hit the streets, they hit it in a fashion where they were trying to uncover the mystery that God had created. And they made great leaps and bounds, probably the greatest leaps and bounds that had ever been made, more at least than any of the evolutionist scientists are uncovering these days, because now these scientists, these atheist scientists, are limiting themselves. They no longer have a true wisdom. Their wisdom has become defiled because they're the ones that are limited. There's a passage in James that I believe refers to the wisdom that comes from the world. And if you want to follow along, it's in James chapter 3. I'll be reading verses 13 through 17. Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly and demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder in every evil thing. For the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering and without hypocrisy. When there's an agenda or selfish ambition behind wisdom, then it's that wisdom, according to the scriptures, that is earthly and demonic. It's not pure as God's wisdom is pure. The wisdom of the world has been defiled. And here's some of that wisdom in faux pas number two. Man is just another animal. Unless you've been hibernating your entire life, I'm sure you've heard that at least 100 times. How come man is always just another animal? Genesis 1:26 says that God created us in His image. And if I remember right, Jesus didn't die on the cross for animals at all, but for whosoever may believe in Him. In my personal evaluation of the scriptures, I'd say there's something special about mankind. And I think I'd be able to look out into the world, even without the scriptures, and see that man is just a little bit different than the animals that are out there with him. It shouldn't be that difficult to see that unless you're using a defiled wisdom. So why then is man always just another animal? I think the answer lies within faux pas number three. If it makes you feel good, you can't do that bad. It's natural. I was born this way. All of these phrases are used as justifications to allow for physical, mental, or emotional gratifications. And the fact that we're just animals means we have no one to answer to. Can anyone see a problem with faux pas number three? On the surface, it may sound reasonable, but the problem is we're dealing with individuals. We're dealing with individual desires. And when one person's desires don't match up with another person's, that's when someone gets hurt. That's where we get rapes or molestations, thievery, backstabbing, heartache, just to name a few. And then also are the self-inflicted problems that a person receives when a person lives for these gratifications. Luke 15 talks a little bit about that. It's a story that most of us are familiar with. We'll be reading verses 11 through 16. Prodigal son. A certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me a share of the estate that falls to me." His father divided his wealth between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered everything together and went out on a journey to a distant country, and there he squandered his estate with loose living. Now when he had spent everything, a severe famine occurred in that country, and he began to be in need. When he went out to attach himself to one of the citizens of that country, and he set him into his field to feed the swine. And he was longing to fill his stomach with the pods that the swine were eating, and no one was giving anything to him. This young son lost everything he had, his entire inheritance, because he didn't understand the consequences of living solely for personal gratification. He ended up jealous of the pigs and the pods that they were eating. Luckily, he had a father who didn't ascribe to the same way of thinking that he did, and his father welcomed him home. Overindulge is yet another faux pas that society gets sucked into. That would be faux pas number four. Truth be told, a person can indulge themselves in just about anything. But when is more become too much. I always say it's somewhere between the second and third donut. But honestly, is there anything that we should indulge ourselves in? Is there anything you can think of that would be beneficial to you by indulging yourself in it? I heard when Mel Gibson was filming Braveheart, he wanted to lose weight for that film. And so all he ate was apples. He gained 8 pounds. Too much of something, rarely good. Indulgence is not beneficial. So what about when it comes to indulging yourself spiritually? You might be thinking, well, I thought of that too. I'm not sure that it works. Picture yourself as a pyramid with 3 sides. One side is your physical nature, one side your mental, and the other side is your spiritual. If you indulge yourself in any of these 3 sides and constantly build upon it, you may become lopsided, top-heavy, and you'll fall over on the weaker 2 sides remaining. Ultimately, when you indulge yourself into something, that means you're leaving something else out. The only indulgence, personally, that I could think of that would be beneficial would be to fully immerse yourself into Christ, all 3 sides at the same time. And this, I believe, is also the greatest commandment in Matthew 22. We can read that. We will read that. That's verse 37. Jesus talking says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind." All 3 sides, complete indulgence. And that immersion has key benefits. If you are living according to that indulgence, if you are working on the greatest commandment, you're a Christian. You've achieved Christianity. You are working for the Lord. You want to please God. But there's another name I have heard, and probably a lot of you have heard also. There's a name society has given us Christians. I call this faux pas number 5. They call it a hypocrite. Probably most of us have heard that. Christians referred to as hypocrites. But why are Christians always referred to as hypocrites? Thought about this one a little bit. I think they're off. Every Christian I've ever known has admitted to being a sinner. So then, where's the hypocrisy when a Christian does something bad? Is it okay to sin? No, it's never okay to sin. And I'm not giving an excuse for that behavior, but at the same time, it's not hypocritical. In fact, if you really wanted to point a finger, and really it's never a good idea to point a finger, you'd be pointing at those outside the church. I've seen enough interviews and I've talked to enough people to know that people think they're good even when they're bad. What I mean is this, when you ask a person if they've ever lied, they've ever cheated, stolen, they usually say yeah, to at least one of those things. But then, in the same breath, they'll say, "But I'm a good person." Why? Because they've justified their actions. But then to top it off, if someone else commits any of those acts against them, lies, cheats on them, steals from them, that person's a bad person. So let me ask you, is there more hypocrisy in the church or outside of the church? It's hard not to finger point, but for some reason, society wants to beat us down. That's when we've got to turn the other cheek. And that also leads us into faux pas number 6. For some reason, people do not like this one. Turning the other cheek is never a popular idea. Outside the church, for sure, but oftentimes within the church as well. It seems to insinuate some sort of weakness. But the truth is, it's a lot harder to turn your cheek than it is to get into a fight. So instead of teaching humility, outside the church, Benjamin, is not. But I say to you who hear, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you. And whoever hits you on the cheek, offer him the other one also. Jesus. Matthew 6. Unfortunately, in today's society, turning your other cheek would just be allowing another hit to your pride. And today, people have been taught to wave their pride around like it's some sort of magnificent banner. But I can't seem to think of a verse in the Bible that says that we'll have some sort of bigger reward for having a bigger pride. You can't either, because really there's no such verse. Actually, Luke 18:9 tells a completely different story. And he also told this parable to certain ones who trusted in themselves, that they were righteous and viewed others with contempt. Two men went up into the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax gatherer. The Pharisee stood up and was praying thus to himself, God, I thank thee that I'm not like other people, swindlers, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax gatherer. I fast twice a week. I pay tithes of all I get. But the tax gatherer, standing some distance away, was even unwilling to lift up his eyes to heaven, but was beating his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, the sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For whoever exalts himself shall be humbled, but he who humbles himself shall be exalted. I guess when it comes down to it, you'll either turn your cheek here on earth, or you'll turn your cheek on the day of judgment. Alright, so I've listed six of society's faux pas. There are actually a lot more than that. You probably even thought of them sitting here tonight. But I decided to stop here so I could ask you all if you know where I may have possibly got this list of faux pas from. I'm sure many, if not all of these, have sounded familiar. My wife and I actually sat down together and we made a list of errors or faux pas that those outside the church often prescribe to. That's not the list I use. That's the one I found. So let me give you a hint if you haven't figured it out yet. I use this phrase, faux pas, because I believe it accurately describes what's happening. If you remember, faux pas means a false path. So, just like in the Garden of Eden, when the devil deceived Adam and Eve with his lies, it created a path that led away from paradise. So too does he create false paths today. Wisdom, the animalistic nature of man, the satisfying of our gratification, indulgence, Christian hypocrisy, and vengeance, instead of turning the other cheek, are all things we've heard out there in society. Where did they come from? Got them from Satan himself. But part of the 9 satanic statements, the creed of the Church of Satan. There are many people out there unaware that they are on a false path. But showing them the right path can be as easy as 1, 2, 3. By 1, 2, 3, I mean 1 John, 2 chapter, 3 verse. If you'd like to follow along. Simple, and it's short. And by this, we know that we have come to know Him if we keep His commandments. whose commandments are we keeping?